You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, our shapeshifter today, as mentioned, is Tabia Kabinde, who has over 20 years of experience in the field of diversity, inclusion, and transformation. She has facilitated numerous dialogues, including at the United Nations at the CSW 2018. Now, Ms. Kabinde was the chairperson of the Fourth Commission of Employment Equity and was reappointed by Minister Thulasin Ngesi in December 2020 to chair the Commission for Employment Equity. She is also a senior advisor at a transformation company called IEA. I suppose I am pronouncing that correctly. She served on numerous, I must just stress that one. She served on numerous boards in the private and NPO sector. Now, during her years of involvement in APSO, which is the Federation of African Professional Staffing Organizations, she was instrumental in driving the transformation agenda within the recruitment industry body. Now, the legacy of her presidency at APSO, which was between 2011 and 2014, has been cited as, and I quote this, please listen to this one, moving APSO from a local association to a world-respected professional body. I've got a lot of questions just on that line. Ms. Kabinde has received numerous accolades, including the Businesswoman of the Year Award conferred by the South African Businesswoman Council in 2013, as well as the Founders Cup, which was conferred by APSO in 2014. And I certainly have the pleasure of talking to Ms. Kabinde this evening. Good evening, ma'am.
Good evening, Tabo, and good evening to your listeners.
How are you doing today?
I'm blessed. Blessed.
I love that. I love that. You are blessed. And how was your day?
My day was very, very hectic. I'm at Poch at the moment. We're busy with some work that we're doing with one of our clients.
Yeah.
And it was a very difficult day.
Oh no. I promise you, we're not going to keep you more than we should be keeping you, right? So we're not going to waste your time. But thank you so much, ma'am. I've been looking forward to this conversation, I must be honest with you. And I'm just, you know how when young people say they are starstruck? I'm just in starstruck moment right now. Because where do I start? Where do I even start? But thank you so much for joining us this evening. Really appreciate your time. And my first question, it's not on the script, it's not here, apparently it's not here, but I'm going to ask you this one question. You know, young people, we grow up, we look, for opportunities to grow and become these people, and we go to school and all that, then we start working and all that. How on earth do you move a company from just it being local to be respected worldwide? Like, ma'am, do you wake up at night and have these crazy thoughts in your mind? What happens? Because I always hear this thing, and I've always wanted to, in my mind, and wanted to talk to people like yourselves who are moving organizations. What does it take?
Well, let me start off by saying that to me, it's not something that I can take credit for having done alone.
Okay.
While I led the organization, I worked with very bright people.
Okay.
Some of which I was learning from and continue to learn from to this day.
Yeah.
And then also quite interesting is that era of my life is a very interesting and beautiful era.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I stepped into a role that I felt unqualified for.
Oh.
And I remember when I was then president of APSO, my one prayer whenever I walked into a meeting or when I was going to interact with people was I would say to God, you know, Lord, you and I are the only people that know that I don't know what I'm doing.
Yes.
I don't know.
Sure.
But I'm asking that it remains between you and I. So show up.
Yes.
And be magnified in the process.
Oh, wow.
You know, so it's a time in my life where I think actually it could be the theme of my life, because a lot of the time I actually don't know what I'm doing. Mm. I know I have certain strengths, but I know that I don't always understand what God is busy with. So I often don't know what I'm doing because I'm constantly being led by Him. So
Sure. I'm going to copy that one to say, God, it's you and I who know that. Angazi lutho la. I'm going to just walk in there and pretend like I know stuff.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, having said that, I think it's also important to do your part and allow God to do His part.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I learned is to be thoroughly prepared, as prepared as I possibly can be. And yet to understand that I must trust God with the process.
Yeah.
That I do my part.
Yeah.
And then when I walk in there, I walk in as if I've never prepared.
Yeah.
Because that's when God takes over.
That's fantastic. Sure. I'm going to copy that. Because I do think that it is not child's play to move an organization into any direction. As much as, you know, we appreciate people like yourselves who have set the standard very high to move an organization into greater strengths, there are people who move them downward. And that on its own is also another strength that you need, I suppose, to move an organization regressively back from where it was. And that's something that happens every day, isn't it?
It is something that happens every day. I think it depends where your heart is. And I know that despite my brokenness and despite my weaknesses, I know that my heart is in God. I often say to people that, you know what, I make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
I'm a broken person, so you will always see my brokenness. My desire to know and to love God is unquestionable, and I'm immovable in that space.
I love that. I love that. Because I think often at times as leaders, as managers in the different spaces, we don't want to show that we don't know. And so you want to exert yourself sometimes unnecessarily, but appreciating that maybe I don't know this, let me leave that to people who are experts around me. And that's why maybe they are there, you know, around you to support you and to give you all the support that you need to grow that organization. I would love to further go on this one because I'm always starstruck, like I said, with people who do amazing things to move companies. It's not an easy thing. It's a very, very difficult thing. But I want to take you back, Mom. Where were you born and what were the social, economic, I suppose, conditions of where you were born?
So I was born in Joburg.
Okay.
I grew up in Soweto in Diepkloof. I'm one of five children. I've got four brothers.
Okay.
I grew up with two of the brothers. I grew up, you know, I grew up privileged. I must say that.
Okay.
You know, I grew up privileged. So I've always had a privilege that most people didn't have, and a better chance that most people didn't have because of privilege. You know, and often we want to downplay the role of privilege.
Yes.
Privilege has got a huge role in terms of how we end up, you know. And me having been privileged, I grew up, my mother was a nurse, and my father worked for, then it was then called Coca-Cola Bottling Company. And even at the time, during the apartheid era, my father was already a sales manager in Coke. I can't claim to know poverty to the extent that poverty has been felt by others.
Yeah.
I can't claim that I did not have people to look up to that I could emulate.
Yeah.
I had the privilege of living with people whom I could emulate.
Yeah.
So I was privileged. However, around me were the levels of poverty that at that time I actually didn't understand. Because at the end of the day, as children, we all showed up in the same way.
Yes.
It's not like today where There are certain children who have iPhones and others who don't.
Yeah.
So, of course, I came out of the home that was called the big house.
Yeah.
But I played in the street
with
other children.
Yeah.
And when we were playing, it was difficult to say who is privileged.
Exactly.
And who
isn't. Exactly.
So that was my upbringing.
Yeah.
I grew up privileged.
Sure. And how has that shaped who you are today?
It's shaped who I am in a very, very big way.
Mm.
I have a father who is in his 80s and who still dreams about starting business.
Sure.
Who has business concepts.
Sure.
And still sees life as if there's still a tomorrow to start a business and to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So he shaped in me the ability to be resilient because we have experienced trauma.
Mm.
But his ability to bounce back is something that has really shaped who I am.
Ah.
I've come from a home where up until I got married, there was a curfew at 7 o'clock.
Yes.
Okay. I was in varsity. I was doing my master's.
Mm.
But there was a curfew at home that I would be home at 7 o'clock. So discipline was also something that was instilled deep in me.
Yeah.
Such that whilst I didn't grow up in a home where Christ was magnified, I grew up in a home where there was strong moral ethics.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And I think that has shaped me as well.
Yes.
So I would say the level of resilience, the level of discipline, and a moral code that was given shaped who I am today.
Mm, fantastic. Oh, that's lovely. That moral code is always very important. I think we live in a world where morals have become very relative, and it depends where you come from or how you view them. And some have even argued that perhaps that's why we've got this downward spiral in the way we do things and children and all these other problems that we perhaps have. But it's such a breathtaking thing to note when we have people like yourselves who are leaders, in fact, leaders that are everywhere and everyone can see and say, morals, very, very important. So I love that. I mean, I gave a synopsis of your career, and it's quite a very lengthy, illustrious career. But where did you start? What was your first job? Do you remember that first job, and how was it?
Yes, I do. One of the privileges I had was that I studied up to master's, and I completed my master's before I started working.
Yeah.
Okay, so my first job, I worked as an intern at one military hospital as an intern.
Okay.
You know, it's interesting. Years back, about 2 years ago, I came across my contract that I had then.
Oh,
and
wow.
As an intern clinical psychologist,
oh, wow.
I was earning 29,000 per annum.
Sure.
And still, I mean, it was a lot of money. You know,
I'm sure it was.
So that was my first career.
Yeah.
You know, that was my first job, being an intern. And I then became a clinical psychologist working in the military, which was extremely interesting. And I really think it shaped my career path, where I ended up and the stuff that I'm busy with to this day.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's how I started my career. When I came in, it was around the referendum. Now, Thabo, you may not even know there was a referendum in our country. I'm not sure how old you are.
Yeah.
But at the time, the white people had to vote yes or no.
Yes.
Independent.
Yes.
And all to democracy, and the vote was yes.
Yes.
So at the time at which I joined the army, It was at a time when there was an integration of the different armed forces after the referendum.
Yeah.
You know? And then we had to work at the integration. And there's an integration of all of us now have the cell number.
Mm.
But there's also a social and a psychological integration.
Mm.
And that's where I took my first bite on dealing with issues of equity, diversity, and inclusion.
Mm, that's lovely. Now, when you, obviously, when you grew up, like you say, you grew up privileged. You perhaps had, access to things that other children did not have. You perhaps were more confident than other children have and all those sort of stuff. Did you think you'll end up in the career that you ended up in? I mean, I'm referring to your very first job. Was that something that you've always wanted to do, even when you were, you know, making a choice to go and study it at university?
No, I didn't end up where I actually wanted to be. You know, what's
okay.
interesting is that my father wanted me to be a medical doctor.
Okay.
And so I took math and science up to matric, and I really struggled with them. I did, you know. But at that time, as children, we didn't have a lot of agency.
Mm.
You know, children were seen and not heard.
Mm.
So I was going to do what my father wanted me to do.
Yeah.
And It didn't work. I went to Tufts at the time, and I enrolled for pharmacology, right? And I failed dismally.
Sure.
Then I had an opportunity to then choose what I wanted to do.
Yes.
And then I enrolled at University of the Northwest as a social worker.
Yeah.
You know, for social work, study social work.
Mm.
And it was at that time that I really started realizing what I love, which is working with people and living out my purpose, which in my mind, I have absolute clarity of what it is.
Mm.
You know, so I didn't start where I knew.
Yeah.
I started from not knowing
and
doing something because it pleased my parents.
Yeah.
And moving to a place where I started doing stuff that I love doing.
Yeah.
And because I love doing it,
yeah,
I immersed all of me in it, and I did well.
Fantastic. What gave you that courage? What made you feel that this is not my purpose, even though maybe my parents like it or may love me to do this thing, but it's not who I am. I'm going to pivot more into what I want. And I'm sure there were resistance and such, you know, discussions that were very uncomfortable with family around you pivoting to perhaps something that they don't necessarily agree with.
You know, Tabolo, there were no discussions at all.
Oh.
There were no discussions. No, no. There was, you know, my children have a privilege of sitting with me and telling me what they wanted to do.
Yes.
So when I failed dismally at Tefloop, and then we had what they called the semester system where you could be excluded if you didn't do well. I was excluded.
Yeah.
So I was at varsity for the first 6 months, and then I was excluded.
Sure.
The following year, it was almost as if everybody had lost confidence in my ability to become something worthwhile.
Sure.
So when I went, I don't even remember discussing with my parents what I'm going to register.
Sure.
You know, I went there, I looked and I said, I think I want to do this.
Hmm.
And it's interesting that God will always take us where we need to go.
Mm.
Sometimes we take detours.
Mm.
But when God says, I know the plans I have for you, he's not joking.
Yeah.
So he knew the plans.
Yeah.
And what seemed like a distraction to my parents, it seemed like, you know, there was no hope.
Yes.
Was just an interruption.
Yes.
Okay? And God used that to take me back to the path that he wanted me to go to. And I must say that even having failed at Tefloop was not a mistake in God's book. It was not a mistake.
Yeah.
There were lessons that had to be learned.
Yeah.
I was never going to pass.
Yeah.
Because I was doing something that I didn't love, so I never studied.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So I went and goofed around at varsity.
Sure.
Okay. And it was instrumental in shaping how I looked at my education the following year.
Sure.
So, yeah. And so what I believe about life is that when we yield to the will of the Lord, and even when we don't, God is sovereign.
Mm.
And God will bring what he has written in our books even before we knit it in our mother's womb.
Yes.
And we often, when we walk that path, whilst some things become difficult in the process, but I'm telling you today, it is the path of least resistance.
Sure.
So I continue to do what I love, and it's not a struggle for me.
Yeah.
Because it is aligned to what God wants for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so it's a path of least resistance. Medicine was not what I was supposed to do. It was very difficult.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hope I've answered your question.
No, you have. You have. You have. In fact, I wanted to get now to the issue of the referendum, right, that you are part of. I'm sure there was a lot of resistance, I suppose, from our white colleagues, you know, when it came to that. I just want to capture your feelings at that particular point in time. What were you going through as you were watching this thing unfold? What was happening in your mind?
Okay, so first, because I'd grown up quite protected, I didn't experience the depth of disadvantagement to the extent that I should have.
Sure.
But walking into the military, and I need to explain how I walked in. So one of the things while I call myself privileged, I didn't have a privilege of was being a master student, and still using a taxi when all the other students that were in my class had cars. So my parents couldn't afford to buy me a car. By that time, I was illiterate. I still used public transport. And the reason why I ended up at one military hospital was that UNISA, which was the institution to which I was enrolled, had a contract with different institutions for internship. And I lived in Attridgeville at the time, and one military hospital was the closest institution that UNISA had a placement.
Yeah.
So I went there by default, but not by design, in the eyes of men. Okay. And I've often had people ask me how I could have gone to the military during that time, you know. And sometimes you don't want to engage people on some of these things, you know, because people make their own minds up around what was happening.
Yeah.
But I ended up there by default, not by design. I didn't have a choice. I could get there by taxi when other people had the privilege of choosing other institutions because they could get there in a different way. So here I was. I'm doing my internship. I walk into an environment where I've learned everything in English. And I walk into an environment where everything is done in Afrikaans.
In Afrikaans.
And I remember at the time, the head of the department, a guy called Trevor Reynolds, who I owe a lot of my knowledge and shaping, you know. And remember, in the military, one of the codes of the military then was that you don't talk politics in the military.
Yeah.
I remember we were sitting around a table and we were having our weekly meeting.
Yeah.
And he wanted to influence all the white people. Of course, I was the only black person in the room.
Yes, yes.
Because there were hardly any black people that were at that rank.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and my qualification put me at that rank.
Mm.
So he says, guys, we're going into a referendum. I'm asking you, and I hope you understand what I mean. I'm asking you to vote yes.
Sure.
And that for me was deep.
Yeah, that's very
he
deep.
He said it in Afrikaans. And my friends who had spoken to me about taking the opportunity in the military, who were involved in politics, by the way, knew this was coming. And that's why they said to me, go, Daria, do go to the military. It's okay, you know. And it was a turning point in a lot of ways, in that it reshaped South Africa. But there was a lot of reshaping that needed to happen in the military, which took a long time. People died. People died. In the military. Different forces came in. I can talk about a few people who committed suicide because the military at the time was still very African. And there was still an invisible hand of apartheid that still operated, you know. And when I got the opportunity to be trained to do the diversity workshop, I grabbed it as a full-time.
Yes.
And I realized at the time that whilst I have not contributed much to our liberation, I had a huge role to play in ensuring equality within the nation.
Yeah, sure.
So I for the first time recognized how big something had was that was put in front of me. How big an opportunity I had to stand there in front of people who've always believed that we're not equal, who said they had a right to oppress others, and to shift paradigm to a point where people could start questioning the assumptions that they had about their being both black and white, for that matter. Because apartheid made us feel less than. And I, myself, despite the fact that I was privileged, also felt less than, you know. And there are other beautiful things about the military. So when I started, I became a lieutenant. And a lieutenant is quite a senior rank, you know, because of my profession. And if I was not wearing uniform, I would have people who did not know me.
Yeah.
And they would call me OOC, you know. And even kids that I saw for therapy would ask, I can still remember this child asking me, Daria, is ye a OOC? And an OOC means domestic worker.
Yes.
It's become perverted to mean domestic worker, right? So it gave me an opportunity. That being me, challenged people. That's having me in that place, challenged people's perception about blackness.
Sure.
So yeah. I fell in love.
Yeah.
I fell in love with the work that I do today.
Sure.
At this point, I realized that, in fact, I was the instrument. It was not the skills that I've learned that made me the instrument.
Yeah.
It was being that here in that environment that was an instrument and that made people challenge who they are and who I am and who black people are.
Sure. That's beautiful, Mama, you know, listening to that. And one can think about just how God had placed you there for a reason, because I suspect it wasn't just for vibes, as young people would say. And it was not for you to be the first black this or the first black that, but it was almost like you were carrying the hopes of the other black people that were looking up to you. That got an opportunity that maybe you got an opportunity that maybe they couldn't get and all that. And so it sounds, just by looking at your work and the history of your work over the last 20 or so years, one can see that you've taken that responsibility with the utmost of respect, but also consciousness to say you need to contribute on your own. Now, when you look at all of this, I mean, we could go on and on about your accolades, what you've done and all that. With the benefit of hindsight, as our politicians always say, I don't know why they like that word, but yeah, with the benefit of hindsight, what is the one high moment that you look back at and you say, yes, this almost solidified that I was on the right path?
Sure, there's been a lot of high moments. The one thing that never leaves me was a guy, I want to go back to the military and share an experience, which for me was a huge, huge victory. This guy had been at the border, and he had been, you know, during the war, fighting terrorists, as they were called, right? So he ends up with serious depression. And so based on the number of psychologists that were there, we just allocated funds. So this guy was given to me to be my client, my patient, as we call them there. And so he comes and he is shocked that he is going to see a black person who helped. And that was part of the shock. And he got to call me sleeping with the inmate.
Sure.
So whenever he spoke to me about other people me, he would refer to me as sleeping with the enemy.
Eish.
And throughout through a therapy, through the sessions that we had, a lot of the barriers, stereotypes, and thinking were broken about the enemy, in inverted commas.
And
I think, for me, the highlight was when he could see me, and I knew that his perception of me as an enemy has shifted. When I asked him, I said to him, "Well, how do you feel about receiving therapy from me?"
Sure.
He said to me, it's a weird question to ask. One of the things that I've done is firefighting, he said. Now imagine you are on the 10th floor, you are in a flat, it is burning, and the firefighters are at the bottom, and they can save you. And you need this help. And the firefighter says to you, "How do you feel about being saved by me? Are you okay to be saved by me?" You know? And by that, what he was saying is, I feel like I'm in a burning building, and it doesn't matter where that help comes from. All I need is help right now. So all these other things are flawed, you know?
Yeah.
And so that was one of the most important encounters about humanity, that people just want to be helped.
That's all.
People just want a better life.
That's all.
You know, so it shaped how I looked at what people need. There's a difference between what people need and what they want. What he wanted was a white psychologist. What he got was a black psychologist, right? But what he needed was help.
Yes.
And I was going to be the tool for his help. So that's one of the things that really shaped me and shaped the work that I do.
Yeah, sure. That's lovely. I'm cognizant of time here. I want to now get into the issue of money, because we are a money and business show, right? And it's always interesting to talk about money with leaders around this topic. You know, you get different perspectives and views. How do you describe your relationship with money? Do you think you've got a good relationship? How has it been? Has it evolved or keeps on evolving?
My relationship with money is not at its best.
Okay.
Let me say that. In the sense that I'm an easy spender, right? But having said that, I don't regret how I spend my money. I do the right thing.
Yes.
I'm responsible.
Yes.
Let me start by saying I'm responsible with money.
Yeah.
So that makes my relationship with money good.
Yeah.
I won't spend money that belongs to people I owe.
Yeah.
The bank and whoever else I owe.
Yeah.
But having said that, what makes my relationship me to think that I have a good relationship, it's not as good as it could be if you think it's in business terms.
Yeah.
And building wealth.
Yeah.
Right? But for me, how I see money is, I'm a steward of money that God gives you. So I do not have a problem spending money in places where I believe it needs to be spent to magnify God and to bring help to others.
Sure.
So if you look at a pure financial perspective of a relationship with money, probably people would say I have a bad relationship with money.
Yeah.
But I know that money is a resource that is necessary for people. And I do not think twice about spending it in ways that will bring God the glory, even if I'm left with nothing after that.
You know what? I think we are done here today, Mom. Just that line has just completed this particular conversation. But that's beautiful. And I suppose with your kids as well, what is the one thing that you say to them about money?
You know, I tell them to save money and to use money wisely.
Yes.
I tell them to spend their money on assets. Mm. But I tell them that money comes to those whose hands are open.
Oh, beautiful.
That if God can trust you with money, he will give you money.
Sure, sure.
Okay. And I think in a lot of ways, without sounding arrogant about it, I do believe that God trusts me with money.
Sure. That's because, not arrogant at all.
Pardon?
I'm saying that's not arrogant at all. That's the truth.
Yes. You know, because I see him put a lot of money in my hand.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And I know that it's not me.
Yes.
And I think God has put in me the desire to share what I have.
Mm.
And so as a result, he put in my hand what I can share and what I can share.
Yep. Yep.
And that's what I say to my children.
Yep.
And when you said that, I also believe that God is enough. I don't trust the character of God.
Mm.
I don't distrust the character of God. When he says he's Jehovah Jireh, I don't distrust
the Lord, the provider.
He will provide.
Yes.
So if I take the money and I use it in the way that I believe he wants me to use it, even if it puts my account at zero,
yes,
I know that he is true to his name.
Yeah.
And will therefore give. And I try and teach my children that.
Sure. Let's glance back at your younger years as we draw to a close. If you just give a glance to your younger years, what advice would you give to your younger self?
There are a number of things that I would say to my younger self.
Mm.
And one of them would have been to say, trust in the Lord with all of your heart and lean not on your own understanding.
Ah.
In all your ways,
acknowledge him.
And he shall direct your paths.
Ah.
I think, in fact, I wish I had met Christ as my Savior when I was much younger.
Yeah.
So I would say to my younger self, being a Christian is not boring, because it looks extremely boring.
Exactly. It does.
You know, it was so boring.
Yeah.
And I looked at a lot of Christians at the time feeling apologetic about life.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not want to be apologetic.
Mm-hmm.
There was almost, I don't know what is the word to use. The word shame comes to mind about being a Christian.
About being a Christian, exactly.
And I never wanted to fit in a group of shame.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so trusting in the Lord with all of your heart would have allowed me to be a Christian that doesn't portray the message of shame. Christianity is so beautiful.
Hey.
I am so in love with being a Christian that I find it not boring.
Yeah.
Or
it is
one of the biggest events that has happened in my life. In fact, not the one.
Mm.
It is the most significant event in my life. Meeting Jesus.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And I hope that young people are listening, that being a Christian is not boring. It is never boring. In fact, it will never be boring. You are even much closer to God. You know, you can tell him, hey, ngifuna 5 rand, manje, or ngifuna 50 million. You know, and he would be listening like, okay, what do you need it for? I need it for this. And like, mamela, I've got you. You know, knowing that you've always got God behind you gives you confidence anywhere you walk. You know, you walk in and you're like, when they say, what's your expectation, salary or business? And you say it with confidence because you know what you plan to do with that money when God places it in your hands. And like you said, when you do that, he knows the plans. You become that almost that channel, man, that he gives money to so that you become a blessing to others as well. And that's what I'm also getting from what you were saying. Anything you would do differently right now? You've sat in boards, you've sat in different leadership and management positions. What would you do differently? What would you change?
I think the one thing that I would change, and it goes back to my younger self, because I think right now I've learned that lesson and I don't do it anymore, would be to not be apologetic about being at the table.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I sit in these meetings and I watch people who don't know God walking around with more confidence than people who know God. And I was one of those people who walked around as if I don't have a legend of the army from heaven behind me. And looking at people who don't know God and fearing them. So what I would do differently, I would have taken the confidence that I had with God, in God, into the boardroom much sooner than what I did. That's what I would have done.
You finish this conversation, Mama. Young people would normally say drops mic, you know, and say drops mic right there. But any final thoughts, Mama? There are young people who look up to you, you know, follow you. Any final thoughts to them? I just also want to bring in, as I'm thinking about it, young people who have also got their results, who might not have received the, you know, the results that they were thinking they would get. As we sum it up, what would be your message of encouragement as a leader?
My message to them would be, the sooner you own your life, the better.
Yeah.
And what do I mean by that? Sometimes things happen to us, and we think things happen to us. Okay. You are in life. You're doing life. And so the sooner you embrace some of the experiences I've had. Difficult experiences, and I still continue to have.
Yes.
And the minute we can say to ourselves, okay, Tabia, this is what you've gone through, right? Own it, it's part of your story, and it's not a bad thing. It may look bad to the world, but there's something instructive about this experience. And how does this experience shape who I'm going to become?
Yeah.
So my failing was instructive in saying to me, you are not a doctor.
Yeah.
God never meant for you to be a doctor. So the shame that went with it and all the other things, I should have taken that and owned it sooner so that I can embrace what the lessons are in order to move forward. So own your story and take your story with, you know, the good, the bad, and the downright ugly, and understand that in all things, God works them for the good of
for
those
the good. Good. Yes, it's true. Mama, thank you so much for taking the time this evening to join us. I do feel like there's still a lot more to unpack. And I look forward to that conversation when we unpack other things. But may God be with you together with the work that you are currently doing as well. And I look forward to the next conversation.
Thank you for having me on your show.
God
really
bless.
Appreciate it. And
thank you so much. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.